All right, here's some questions, and I've got some answers. Okay. Really, like Stephen Hichter, I think Q&A is such a, it really just, again, comes alive, because how do we apply our experiences? These are obviously questions that you have and haven't heard maybe a suggestion or a solution for them, and maybe I can enlighten you with something that I've done here. Often when I've gone through the first step, 9 steps with the sponsee, they stop calling and seem to disappear. Can you suggest anything to hold on to sponsees, keep their attention, etc.? Yes. When I work with someone and take them through the steps, because the 9th step, making amends, may take a very long time for them to complete that list, we still continue when we talk about 10 and 11 and 12. But when we're done, my commitment to the people I sponsor is we then go into the 12 traditions, we then review the 12 concepts, and then we review the front of the service manual, which is all the different categories and opportunities of service through our service structure. There's not a race to get through this information, but I want them to know the entire 3 legacies of our program. And so this is what I do to keep their interest or keep their attention. So yes, there are some things to do. How long time should the program take? Mornings, evenings? I'm not exactly sure what that means. How long time should the program take? So maybe if you want to come up and talk to me afterwards, I'm not sure what you're asking there. I'm sorry. Is the program not just forcing a positive attitude upon oneself? Boy, I needed one. I needed a positive attitude. They talk about we're brainwashed. Hey, the old saying was, hey, my brain needs washing. I needed new tools because the ones I had were very limited and they were of my own making, very faulty in design, and very minimal. And yes, this has helped me to gain a better attitude. Now, there's some people who just always will be of a cynical nature, but maybe they won't be as cynical. I don't know. But it certainly did impose or force me into a positive attitude. Instead of looking at everything as negative and victimized and so forth, I have an opportunity to look at it in a whole different way, an opportunity of growth. Hi. In the last paragraph on page 84, it says, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. I agree. But why do people still talk of a physical or emotional craving? Why are they not free, some of them, from fighting after years of sobriety? Well, I know that my experience at 26 years was of a physical craving. I don't call or look at myself as a booze fighter, which for me is someone who just doesn't drink. I was that probably those first 7 months when I just didn't drink and went to one meeting a month and toughed it out, you know, because really the whole point in toughing it out for me was to keep them off my back, take the focus off of me and get them thinking somewhere else. That was, you know, for me, what I did, that booze fighting thing. If I know that it's just really important, I didn't like the fact that I felt that way. It was very terrifying to me because I thought, what am I doing wrong? And I had to just look at my own inventory, and there wasn't anything I could see that I was doing wrong. There wasn't anything that I was justifying or rationalizing away. It just was the fact that I have the disease of alcoholism and I am not cured of that. And that means that there will be times when I'm going to think about it where I will feel the craving or be mentally obsessed. But the thing of it is I don't have to take the action. And whenever that has ever happened to me, it's always passed because I've stayed so close to the middle of you. I've stayed in the middle of the herd. I've stayed in the pack. It's the ones, as I said last night, who drink, who have faded away. They've gotten their new higher power in a hymn or a job or the children, or I'm going to fix this relationship, and they begin to, you know, get rid of the sponsees. They don't need to call their sponsor anymore. They know all that stuff. And that kind of thinking gets happening. And that is some of the most dangerous thinking for somebody like myself. At 28 years of sobriety, not that I need my sponsor to tell me what color to paint my nails. No. But I love to check my thinking out with her on things that revolve my mental and emotional states. I really do. It's a lot safer for me to do that. How much meditation, in your experience, does a new person need? And do you talk to God first and then listen, or vice versa? How much meditation does a new person need? Boy, you try and be quiet for just 1 minute, and you've got a lot of committees going on up here. You got a lot of thinking going on up here. Meditation for me has not ever been, again, my own experience has not ever been one where I have sat for long periods of time with a quiet head, with a quiet thought. Usually it's something about 5 or 10 minutes sitting out in the garden of our home and just looking at God's creation. A lot of times it's just sitting in a meeting and watching somebody take a first-year birthday cake. A lot of times it's just watching some of these new ones come on fire. That, to me, is meditation. Now, I don't know if I'm explaining that very well, or if, again, it's not so much that I feel like I'm a lot more of service in an upright capacity than waiting for the internal self-knowledge to come in from God that he will express through me. I think he talks to me through you. He talks to me through observing and watching you and watching him work in your life. That is the greatest meditation to me and reminder of how powerful he is and that he works. I don't know how much a new person needs. Perhaps, again, talk with your sponsor. Maybe they have some suggestions. I know that I am spending a lot of time alone. Really got confusing. Do I talk to God first and listen, or vice versa? I generally start off with the chatting, and as we finish, or as I finish chatting with God, there's always just this quiet moment of, okay, let's go. And we get on about our day, and I think that he just provides those moments of listening time to me in the times that I mentioned. What do you do when a sponsee you've been working the steps with stops calling you? Do you call her once, twice, or not at all? I actually have an experience right now happening, or I've had a couple recently, but the one I'm thinking of is, here's a woman I've sponsored for probably 10 years now, 11, 9, 10 years, and has been very, very regular in calling, very regular. We had a What works very well for me with the women I sponsor out of town is that we have a set time to call every week, and we confirm that each week, because that way we're not playing telephone tag, and I can be there mentally, she's there mentally, we get our work done on the phone, we take those 30 minutes, and that works very well for me. And due to a variety of things, she hasn't been able to have or create or find a regular time that could be committable for her. So I've just said, keep in touch, you know, stay in touch, at least call me once a week. And I find that a nice continued connection. But a month went by. And so I sent her an email. I hope you're doing well. I hadn't heard from you in a while. Hope things are going okay. I followed it up with a phone call on both home phone, cell phone. No call back. A couple days later, I still haven't heard anything. And so I called her son. That's like my... It's not like I like to go through other people to get to someone, but he was my last resource because I don't know, is she in the hospital? Is she injured? Is she died? You know, in her case, she's having to stay underground due to a situation. and he informs me of what's been going on and so forth. And so finally she called me, and she said, I've been sick. I've been in and out of the hospital. I've been having problems with here. I said, you know, I'm sorry to hear that, but I would not have known any of this. You know, I'm here to be of support if you'd like it. I'm here for you. And because of this situation going on in her life, it's not like she can have this big circle of inclusion. She has to continue to stay a bit hidden. And I'm one of those people that's been in the corner all the time of support. Well, I know. Well, now another month has gone by and no contact. And again, what I've learned over the years is not to make assumptions of what they are or are not doing. I have to adjust that and make sure my ego is out of the way. What do you mean they're not calling me? I have to make sure my ego is out of the way, but more importantly, that I come from this place of I'm not their mother, I'm not their warden, I'm not their, sergeant. I'm someone here who's willing to be of service and to help them if they would like help. And so I know that when I return, I will give her a call and see how she's doing. Now, at this point, I probably won't be making more calls. I don't have a problem reaching out, but I reach out to a certain point. After two or three times, I've made it very clear that I'm here to be of help. I'm not here to judge you. I'm not here to change whatever you're doing. I'm just here to be of support if you would like it. If you don't like my support, that's okay too. And like I mentioned earlier about the gal who said, I don't want to do this anymore, I will focus my energy and my thoughts on the ones who do want to do it. And I have to remember that it's not that, I did anything wrong. People just can take a drift. I haven't changed anything that I've done, but people can take a drift. As long as I am consistent with my actions, that is the best thing that I can do. And should she call, there's no judgment. You haven't called me in a month and blah, 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 blah. I don't need to hammer anybody. That's the least thing that they need. They know they haven't called me in a month. I don't need to remind them. I don't need to put them on some restriction. This is not that type of a deal we're in. I just need to, hey, are you okay? What can I do to help? That's where I come from. And I also am more than willing to let people go and on their own journey for whatever they need to do, because I don't know what it is. I'm on this path, and if you want to join up, hey, come on, let's have a good time. And if you find something else you want to do, God bless you. Follow your own conscience. Very clear. Hey, if you need to separate off, go do it. I'll be here when you get back. Without judgment or you have to, pay homage to me or anything like that. Not by any means. So that's what I do with people about when they stop calling. I do that reach out for a few times and then let them know that I'm here and I love you and I'm here if you want help. I've talked about how to work daily meditation. Here's one. Should one make in the evening inventory in writing? I know that some people do, some people don't. I'm not one that does. The time when I will take an inventory in writing is almost like a little mini fourth step. If I'm really troubled about something and it just keeps circling and circling and driving me crazy, that's the time when a piece of paper and a pen helps, because there is magic that comes through that. Not on the computer, not on the checklist. There is something very magical that depowers this thing when it goes head to hand, to pen to paper. And so, yes, a few times, but not on a daily. I just don't take the time to write an evening inventory. Should we bring a newcomer to our home as Bill did? It's clear on the directions in here. Make sure that it doesn't interfere with your family. Sometimes you'll need to do that type of thing. I have done it. I always and it says make sure that you're doing the right thing. It's not how to give, but when to give. Make sure that they're not becoming dependent upon me by so doing. Because then there's this, will you help me get a job? And will you give me clothes? And will you give me a place to live? And all that. Make sure that you're, it's okay with your family. I don't find that it's good to have them there for a long time. That's not been my experience, just a short while to help them get on their feet. People helped me get on my feet. I like to think that this is my opportunity to pay it back. But each situation is of its own guidance and of its own circumstances. How do you deal with other people, or when other people treat you unkindly or say hurtful things in your daily inventory? I was reminded of this when Steve was talking. Thanks, Steve, for the reminder about that inventory and about amends and stuff like that. Thanks a lot, Steve. It's one that I've really been tossing around. And I have talked about it with my sponsor. I had a situation with a woman who I was sponsoring. She and I had been friends for a number of years. She asked me to sponsor her because I'd moved up to closer to her area. She'd had a long-distance sponsor, and now I'm closer where she could actually drive to see me. And so we began this journey of sponsorship together, and for the first 4 or 5 months, everything really went very well, and then things started happening with her work. And a couple things I found here is that I'm not so militant that you have to call me at this time, even though it totally interrupts your schedule of the day. You know, we find a compatible time for each other. And again, the point being is that I'm here, you're there, we're not playing phone tag for a week. I'm busy, they're busy, we find something compatible. Okay, so now this time that we had was not compatible, and so, okay, here's my schedule, which will work for you. She selects the time, misses it half the time. Well, I'm this, I'm that. Okay, if this time isn't workable anymore, what is? She picked. So I'm, again, trying to be accommodating and yet still take the role of guidance or sponsor or whatever. Not in a militant way, but what's happening is there's this shift, and there's this, I'm being told what she's going to do now, and I don't know, but that just always kind of rubs me the wrong way. I'm so more susceptible if we can kind of collaborate versus you're telling me what you're going to do, you know, so now you're going to kind of sponsor yourself and I'm just in it for the, you know, picture. And so time goes by, and then all this, you know, I don't hear from her for a couple of months, and I get an email. And she's very big on emails that, well, she's just not sure what she's going to do about this sponsorship thing. You know, I mean, we're both too sober long enough to be talking about minute stuff like this. But so we're both, so how do we get to resolve if we're both too sober long enough to talk about a problem that's obviously got something to do with me because I'm your so-called sponsor? Uh-huh. Okay, well, I'm just going to leave this one alone for a little while, and I just sent an email back. Well, I hope that you find some sort of resolve for yourself, and if there's anything I can do, let me know. Any way I can help. And I love you, and, you know, I just hope you find some kind of peace there. And so for the women I sponsor, I do a sponsee list, which has your name and your phone number. So because many of us travel around and you kind of get a feel for where the people where if you're traveling, you got like a sober family member to call. And so I called and I said, I hope things are going well. I hadn't heard from you in a while. And I just wanted to know if you still wanted to be on the sponsorship list or not. No, I don't think so. I said, okay, that's fine. You know, I believe that you're probably still calling your old sponsor, and that's great. And, you know, I'm sorry things didn't work out, and as you'd hoped, and blah, blah. And so there was this, you are just awesome. You are just so gracious about this. And, hey, no problem. We can still be friends and so forth. And, okay, that was in the morning. So that afternoon, I get an email saying, again, how wonderful I was and all that, and gracious and all, just lots of beautiful accolades. Okay. And I love to go to the movies too. Maybe we could get together and go to the movies sometime when you're free, and start a new job thing here. And so I responded with what I thought was a kind response. I said, thanks for the, you're welcome. Glad I could be of service for as long as I was to you. As far as getting together for movies, I don't know. My schedule is so filled up right now. I don't know when that would be, but, that'd be great sometime. Good luck on the new job, blah, blah, blah. Love, Deb. That was late afternoon. On Monday, this was like on a Friday, on Monday, I got the most venomous, vicious email about my response. How arrogant do I think I am that your schedule is so busy? How patronizing I was. It was just, let me just say, please don't write venomous emails to anybody. It was like a drive-by shooting. And it was unprovoked. I did not feel that it was provoked. It was devastating to me to get an email like that. I don't send ugly emails, and it really is devastating to get them. And I was just crushed, because it never, ever was my intention to cause harm, to imply that I was arrogant or patronizing, not by any means at all, and that it would have been better if I hadn't responded at all. And so anyway, I'm just trashed. So I called my sponsor. I don't explain who the personality is. I just say, here's the first email. Here's my response. Says, oh, well, that was fine. They didn't think that. And when I read her the other one without drama to it and just read the words, she said, I just don't understand where that would have come from. Now, I'm not telling you that to justify that I'm perfect or I did nothing wrong. I don't know. And I didn't sugarcoat it for my sponsor at all. And I said, I want to know. I'm way too emotionally involved with this. Here's what I would like to send back. And she agreed. And so I sent back, dear so-and-so, I am very sorry that my email was hurtful. It was never intended to be. I still wish you a journey on this path, and look forward to seeing you again sometime soon. Love, Debbie. Because it went from love so-and-so to so-and-so. And the email came back because it was blocked. So as soon as hers got sent, the only thing I can think of is that she was not interested in anything I was going to be sending back. Now, this was over a year ago. It took me several months to get over the pit of my stomach hurt, that I would cause so much hurt to somebody that they would respond so poisonously. I have not seen her yet. I have not made a phone call. I don't know, as of this moment, what the conclusion of this story will be. But I do know that every time she comes into my mind, I don't want it to stay there very long. I practice bless her, bless her, bless her, and change me. Bless her and change me. I practice that saying of the prayers at night for her prosperity, her happiness, her spiritual path, all that kind of stuff, whenever I'm troubled by that again. I don't want revenge. That's not where I go. I just don't understand that kind of hurt. Secondly, I also know, which again does not justify it, I also know I'm on the long list of people this has happened to. So it's not like I was plucked out and really set myself out there. I'm on a long list of people this has happened to. But it doesn't matter how that happened. What matters is how I can live at peace with that. So I pray for them. Most of the time, she's not in my mind anymore. But when it comes in, I try not to have conversations with people who aren't there, you know. Great little thing I learned a couple years ago. Very helpful, too. I tell you, don't you hate it when you have... I have certain scenes in my life that I have replayed. They're 8 and 9 years old. But I have replayed them and redone my part, you know, every time. It's like a film that you try to edit. It doesn't edit, and you just got to shelve that stuff. That's probably a really long answer to your question, but I hope that it helps, because it was hurtful. And when I do think of it, this is where I go. God, if I do see her or have an occasion, let me have some dignity and grace about it. Give me the words that I'm going to need to respond or take care of a situation and do the right sober action. Thank you.
I just want to thank Debbie, Hector, and Steve for a great journey today.